Hello and welcome to Taking Hugh for Granted, the podcast in which two Hugh Grant enthusiasts watched all of his seminal works, including every single movie, his greatest TV shows, and even the student film he made at university. In this series, these Hugh Grant experts will look back at his career to create the definitive list of the greatest Hugh Grant productions ever made. I'm Digger Waite, and I'm joined, as always, by my colleague and fellow Hugh Grant obsessive, Oscar Beardmore Grey. Oscar, how the bloody hell are you doing today, mate?
I'm doing very well, Deez. Hi, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Oscar, we're basically, today we will get to halfway through. How are you feeling about the list so far?
I'm feeling pretty good about the list. It's been a very cathartic experience so far. We've had two episodes so far. There's been a lot of rubbish, and we're slowly getting, we're rising, the cream is rising here, aren't we? So, get halfway through, at this point, surely the balance will tip hopefully the good film favor.
Exactly. We'll start to see some better films. So just if you're new, we've done two episodes already. We're ranking all 50 films, but also we're including in that some of his TV shows, some of his TV movies, and of course, as mentioned, the student film he did. Let's talk about how we've ranked this. So we've ranked this. I love this because out of 20 for us both, it's like Football Manager, if anyone's played that. I love that bloody game. But so we've ranked him on four things about the film. How much is Hugh in the film out of five? How good is Hugh in the film out of five? How sexy is Hugh in the film out of five? Very important.
Most important.
And is the film any good out of five? Based on that, what do you think people can expect today?
I think, Diggs, we can expect some sort of mid-table rankings here. We've got some films that I think you're going to think are really good. There's some films that I think were really good. And I think there's going to be some disagreements here. There's a couple that spring to mind. I won't say them right now. I'm definitely looking at a couple where there's going to be some disagreements. But overall, these are neither kind of like blockbuster Hugh Grant classics, but neither are they drivel that you would want to put to the very, very back of your DVD collection or just take to the dump. So I think it's going to be another exciting episode.
What a low bar. I love it. And you're absolutely right. It's going to be a contentious episode yet again. We're going to have a few more draws in there, so we'll debate about which one should end on top. So number 30 to 21, let's go.
At number 30 in the list of Hugh Grant's best ever films to date, it's The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
So, Oscar, coming in at number 30, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. 2015. Talk to me about this film.
Diggs, I really like this film. I know you don't like this film. I called you out last week for being pretentious about Hugh Grant films. I'm going to say that this film is one that I really enjoyed, and it's not meant to be something that's that deep. It's meant to be pure entertainment. It's a Guy Ritchie film. It's kind of like a spy thriller. You're taken back behind the Iron Curtain. It involves like Russian and American spies. So, you know, in some ways it's kind of like we've seen that film before, but I just thought it was a lot of fun. And, when I was reading the YouTube comments of the trailer and stuff, there are a lot of people in there who are like, this is one of the most underrated films of the 2010s. So I know you're sitting there like being like, oh my God, I can't believe people said that. But look, I gave this film 14 out of 20. So that's a pretty decent score.
That is a decent score.
You gave it 10. So I know that you're going to come in hard for this one, especially after you roasted Operation Fortune, which is another one of Guy Ritchie and Hugh Grant's collaborations. So I don't want to hear what you want to think. I don't want to know what you thought, but please tell me.
Well, listen, I'll keep it brief. I mean, this for me, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. does not have the same issues that Operation Fortune has. Operation Fortune, as we know, I thought was real shite. But what I would say, taking it back to what's important about this film, Hugh Grant looks great in this film and he acts really well. Like, his character is suave, he's funny, he's kind of sexy, he's just a bit of a silver fox. you know, he's great. The problem is he's barely in it. And I think that is a bit of a, that's what takes away from this film as well. And like you said, I mean, I've just got here in my notes, I'm a grumpy bastard. And I didn't like the rest of the film. I don't know what it is about Guy Ritchie's films for the most part. It just feels like I sit there and I'm looking to pick holes. And what a boring life to lead. So I think I'm really sorry to everyone, and especially yourself, pulling this film, dragging it into the back half. But personally,
you're a purist, Diggs.
I'm a purist. But let's be real. I personally think I'm happy with it being where it is here. But maybe when we look back at this next 10 at the end of the episode, we can see whether we're still happy with it being below some of the others in this list.
Yes. Well, Diggs, I mean, let's start off there, because at 29 is a film that I think should be a lot lower than it is.
Number 29, 2 weeks' Notice.
2 weeks' Notice, 2002. Talk to me.
Oh dear, oh dear. What can I say about 2 weeks' Notice? 2 weeks' Notice, for people that haven't seen it, the briefest synopsis in the world is Hugh Grant is some hotshot who's got, you know, in New York, who's got loads of money. He even, like, let's get this out of the way now, he brushes shoulders with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is in this film, ladies and gentlemen, giving really quite a wooden performance, let's be honest. But Donald Trump, you know, might be good at some things. He might be charismatic in front of a crowd of, you know, Republicans, but he's not when he's on screen in this film. He is very wooden and he's not great. But that's who Hugh Grant's supposed to be. And I think Hugh Grant's looking to, like, demolish some building. Anyway, Sandra Bullock is a sort of hippie woman, and she let's be real, and she wants to stop some building or whatever he's doing from happening, and she's got some, like, she's a Harvard educated lawyer, she's incredible. Anyway, it's a classic rom-com. Hugh Grant and her, they come from different areas, but they come together and they get together. The chemistry between them is amazing. I think genuinely it's really, really good. And Hugh Grant plays maybe a character we've seen before, but he does it well, I guess. I suppose that's the issue with the film for me, is that maybe we've seen it before, and I think it maybe at points felt a bit old and tired. And obviously Donald Trump being in it really does make it also bad. So what did you think?
Diggs, I've got my arms crossed on this one. I feel like this is your Man from U.N.C.L.E. for me. Like, this film, I'm just going to say right now, would not get made in 2023. And you know, in some ways, we're not here to pick holes in history. But this is just, it is such a fucking terrible premise of a film. I'm sorry. You basically got like this absolutely horrifically privileged, like Harvard educated lawyer who treats everyone like shit, is a misogynist towards Sandra Bullock, basically uses her as his personal PA, even though she is a Harvard-educated lawyer, to pick out his clothes for him. And he's just a bad guy. He basically he's happy with his corporate job, and he wants to steamroll this community project that Sandra Bullock is passionate about. And he's basically a dick to every single person in the office. This is the kind of film where it's 2002. So, you know, if there's a fat person in the film, and so they just make fat jokes about this, you know, this cleaner or something who is actually a lawyer or something like that. Yeah, this is the kind of comedy, the highbrow comedy that we're going for in this rom-com. And like you say, the fact that they casted in Donald Trump sort of makes this film brilliant. But
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
it's in my personal view, it's pretty forgettable as well. And look, it's another one of Mark Lawrence's collabs with Hugh Grant. Like we spoke in the previous episode about the rewrite, and did you hear about the Morgans? And both of those films, I think, are pretty bad as well. So this just joins a club, but it's slightly elevated above those two.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I mean, the only saving grace really for this film is, like I said, maybe their chemistry, and also the fact that Hugh Grant's nipples are really small. And we found that out in this film.
Yes, nice. We did. Yeah, and many other films too after that.
Yeah, yeah.
28th is Sense and Sensibility.
Coming in at 28, we have Sense and Sensibility. Long-time listeners of the podcast will be going, ooh, Oscar, talk to me.
I think this is the first one that will really ruffle the feathers of anyone born before the year 1970.
Yeah, and they're listening in their droves.
Yes, exactly. All those Jane Austen fans out there, I apologize, because I do not share the same passion for Jane Austen and period dramas. And I think it's something I need to be educated in, frankly, because until I get that education and appreciation, I think I'm just going to shit on all these period dramas. You know, I'm the kind of person who, you know, when my mum was watching Downton Abbey, I was out of the room as soon as the television was on. So from that point of view, it's not a surprise that I didn't like this film. I know that many people see this as kind of like the moment where Jane Austen was dragged into back into the like 20th century. And since then, there's been like this, I guess, renaissance of Jane Austen films. You know, there was Pride and Prejudice remakes, etc. So it's done great things for the genre, I guess. My problem with it is just, it's bloody boring. I was watching a little bit of it again today, and you know, yeah, Emma Thompson's fun and she's good, and you know, it's got a good cast. It's got Alan Rickman. It's got Kate Winslet. Before I guess she was pretty famous, and you know, Hugh Grant does his best at his little penguin. Yeah. You know, he's got his shoulders up to his chin and he looks like this. But I think it's just not for me, Diggs. And you know, sometimes films are just not for you. But I know you have the complete opposite view of the film, and I know you're a fan. So please tell me why this film should be higher than 28th.
Well, I just don't think, you know, you don't have to be a Jane Austen fan. I am not a Jane Austen fan. I haven't even seen Pride and Prejudice. I haven't read these books. That sort of stuff, I don't really think interests me either. I think, but something about this film, when I sat down and watched it, I just was blown away by the script. I thought the acting was incredible. I thought the direction from Ang Lee was amazing. And that's where I think you're right, where it pulled it up into the 21st century, because even though it was in 1995, like, honestly, it was, I couldn't believe what I was watching. We were dreading watching this film. And I sat there hugging myself, giggling like a little girl, Oscar. I'll be stereotypical. I'll be potentially sexist here. I was giggling like a little schoolgirl. I was so happy. There's the scenes with Emma Thompson and Edward Ferris, aka Hugh Grant, where, you know, they're like trying to goad out this little girl who's like hiding under the table, and she loves geography, and they're saying that where's the position of the Nile, and they think it's in Abyssinia, and they think it's in, you know, Lewisham or something, I can't remember. Anyway, it's genius. And but they think, and like, it's just the flirting, the acting, some of it's over the top, some of it's really understated. I just felt like this film, for me, I loved it. I loved it so much, and it completely blew me away. So I rated it so highly on a lot of these. But the problem is, how much is Hugh in it? I didn't rate him highly on that. How good is he? He is good, but it's not like, I wouldn't say he's 5 out of 5 good. Do you know what I mean? Is he sexy? Not really. I've said 3 out of 5, even that's a stretch. He's only sexy because of the way that he, you know, like I just said, deals with the children and stuff, and the fact that he's like, the flirting with him and Emma Thompson's great. The film for me genuinely is 5 stars. So I gave it 5 out of 5 for that. But I do understand that on our ranking list, it can't really be much higher up, but it does still hurt. And I love this film so much. And all I will say though, is the other day I was around my girlfriend's house, and her sister was like, oh, should we watch a bit of Sense and Sensibility? And we'd been out that day, we'd had a few drinks, and I was watching it and being like, this isn't quite hitting, is it? I feel like maybe you have to be in the right mood. It's not one to be like, everyone, come on, let's have a couple of drinks and watch this, because you're suddenly all like, uh-oh, this isn't a laugh film, is it?
Yeah, it's not a laugh out loud film, is it? It's kind of like, no. Tugs at your emotional heartstrings. And maybe one of the things that I didn't appreciate the first time I watched this is that, you know, it's like the opposite of like a Man from U.N.C.L.E. I mean, comparing those two films, like Chalk and Cheese, not much point, but, you know, there's lots of like unsaid things that happen in things like Sense and Sensibility, things that you've got to like infer from the characters' expressions and body language. And that's like the beauty of it, isn't it? And so I think I just didn't pick up on that. And like, I know that Emma Thompson, she won an Oscar. She's like the only person to have won an Oscar for Best Actress and Best Adapted Screenplay or something like that.
Yeah,
so
that's cool.
It's held in high regard. I'm just here to say that if you want a snooze fest, watch this film.
Battling it out for 27th, 26th and 25th are The Dawning, Champagne Charlie and The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain.
So, Diggs, we have our first tie of episode 3 of our epic retrospective ranking of all of Hugh Grant's works. So, to come in at either 25th, 26th or 27th, we have Champagne Charlie, 1989.
Huge.
The Englishman... Excuse me, let me finish. The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain. There's a tongue twister for you. Or yeah. The Dawning. Mm. These are three quite interesting films that probably, if you're new here or you're not as big a Hugh Grant fan as us, you probably would never have heard of them. So we should probably just start maybe giving a very brief overview of those three films. And then, Diggs, maybe you could give me what you think the order of those three films should be in our ranking.
Amazing. Well, yes, please. So The Dawning, 1988, it stars Anthony Hopkins. That's already like really cool. He's an IRA guy. He runs to hide in someone's house. He's eventually caught by people, including sort of Hugh Grant, and they shoot him and kill him. The next one, Champagne Charlie. This is about, it's based on a true person. Some guy who owned like an amazing champagne empire, basically, and took it to America and was in the French Revolution, but then went to saw the Civil War in America and all sorts of crazy shit goes down there. And then The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain is exactly that. I can't tell you how much. Like, we've talked about the title of this film being really long and crazy already, but literally that is the film. He's an English cartographer, you know, guy who makes maps or whatever. They go to this little town in Wales, Fordan Garw. And I think I've got that right.
I love how you got that. That's class.
Well, but also it's because Hugh Grant in the film keeps being like, when he ever has to say the name of the mountain, he's always like, just like does everything he can not to say it. They're making this map of Wales during World War One. They go to this little town, and this village love the fact that they've got this mountain. Or you know, in their, but they go up it and they measure it, and guess what? It's not big enough to be a mountain. It needs to be 1,000 feet, and it's only 984 or something. And but guess what? All the townspeople, they climb together, they put loads of mud up there, and then they re-measure it, and it's then a mountain. So he goes up a hill and he comes down a mountain. Blimey O'Reilly. Okay, so I think that's a pretty good overview of those.
That is an excellent synopsis of all three of those, Diggs.
Thank you very much. Simon would be proud.
He would be.
So my order personally would be, at number 27, I would go for The Dawning. At number, and this is now where I really struggle, and I'll tell you exactly why. At number 26, I think I'm going to go for The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain. And then at number 25, I'll go Champagne Charlie. However, I just want people at home to know that The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain, I think, and I really stressed in our episode about it, that it's the most bog-standard film ever. And I just think that if it came 25th on our list of 50, slap bang in the middle, that would be the funniest and most fitting thing in the world. So I really kind of want it to be there. However, I cannot divorce myself from the fact that Champagne Charlie, a TV movie that goes on for 3 hours... And I think maybe it's time to talk about it a bit more. And he has Hugh Grant doing a terrible, terrible French accent during it. Just awful during the whole 3 hours. And yet, somehow, I loved it. And it really made me think, and it was a load of fun. So that one, I think I'd put up there. So talk to me, Oscar. What are your thoughts?
Oh, Diggs, I absolutely love all of that. That, you know, that is just, that epitomizes our podcast, I think. You know, like, we're debating these two, quite frankly, very average films from the mid-90s, basically. Deciding which one's 25th and 26th in Hugh Grant's best films ever. I think we're at consensus that at 27, The Dawning. The Dawning is...
Yeah, yeah.
it's not bad. I mean, I think we should also say how much effort we put into getting this film. It's a bit like Truffaut Housewarming, which we talked about in a previous episode. Diggs and I both ordered this film off Amazon. I think I got mine from St. John's, Newfoundland. I'm not sure where you got yours, but
I got mine from Canada as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It cost quite a bit. It was like 20, I think mine's about $20 or something like that. But you know, it was actually, again, like quite a cathartic experience buying the DVD, putting it in your DVD player, PS4, whatever. And it's kind of a nice story. I think you sort of summed it up quite well. There's not too much to unravel. It's kind of fun that Anthony Hopkins and Hugh Grant are in a film together. Of course, they are also in Remains of the Day, which we will be talking about at some point in this ranking. But I agree with you, Diggs. It's really hard to pick between Champagne Charlie and The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain. I don't think I'm going to argue with you. I think I personally might put The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill above Champagne Charlie.
I
think there's space in this list for soft spots and personal favorites. And for me, I loved our episode of The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain. It's just such a wholesome film.
I
think we said in the film that it's the kind of movie that, you know, you're with your grandma at Christmas or whenever, you know, and you're just looking for the most mundane, non-offensive activity in the world. This is the perfect film.
Yeah.
And it's over in an hour and a half, and it's just very wholesome. Like, these Welsh people, like, building, it's like a community feel type film. And I just loved it. So for me,
Let's put it at 25, because honestly, if you're saying you want it that much and there's a space for soft spots and stuff, and I want it to be 25th so bad for that very reason, we've got to put it at 25. Got to put it at 25, because I completely agree. I mean, just to say as well, like, there's a couple of other things about the film. Hugh Grant, some of the outfits he wears are amazing. He wears some incredible hats. So please, again, do check the film out for that. Tara Fitzgerald, just as another thing as well, she is a lesser known Hugh Grant leading lady, and we love her in this film and others that they're in together. So do watch it for that. But I do want to mention maybe a bit more about Champagne Charlie, just because for people that don't know, this film is fucking nuts. It like opens and like everyone fancies Hugh Grant in it. And to be honest, he looks kind of smoking at the beginning of the film. Like, he looks hot. Like, he's really good looking. He then, like, they break out onto the streets of France, where it's like a fucking scene from Les Mis. And Hugh Grant, like, I think he like beats the shit out of a few guys, and I think he might even shoot someone and kill them. And then they just find this random woman there and they start kissing. It's nuts. It's crazy. And the film doesn't really stop, because you still have the Civil War. There's a point at this film where Hugh Grant grows a moustache, which is really bad, and that kind of ruins it. And then later on in the film, he grows a beard. Honestly, some of the best he's ever looked. Like, honestly, incredible. It's a strangely watchable film, but and despite the fact that he does have this terrible French accent throughout it, and there's one line in particular which I'll never forget, where he goes, "You'd sell flavoured water if it saw the profit." That is his French accent.
Yes, Diggs. I think you just sold it to everyone.
At number 24, it's 9 months.
So, wow, that was a lot of fun. Coming in at 24, Oscar, 9 months, 1995. I mean, talk to me.
See, Diggs, I think this is maybe the point where our ranking is a little bit flawed, potentially. Because you know how we talked about earlier in the episode, where we rank things out of five. And one of the categories is how much is Hugh in it.
Yeah.
If Hugh is the leading man in the film, he's not going to get anything less than 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Which means it automatically elevates the film, even if it's shit. I'm not going to say that 9 months is a complete disaster.
Yeah.
But it comes at a very interesting time in Hugh's career, which I know that you'll want to talk about. So maybe I'll let you talk about that bit.
Yeah.
Just to summarize, Hugh is basically, again, a bit like 2 Weeks' Notice. He's a shit.
Yes. Yeah. He is a shit.
He's a businessman who his wife is pregnant and he doesn't want to have a kid, basically. Mm. And he's really jealous of like his smoking hot mate, Jeffrey Goldblum, who's like a bit of a player. He's hanging out with all the ladies. He drives a fast car. He's constantly in Hugh's ear telling him how shit it is to have kids. Hugh's seeing like other people in the community who've got kids who are a complete nightmare. And he's just like, I'm out. I don't give a shit. I don't want to have a kid. And he just basically abandons his pregnant wife in her time of need. And that is the premise of a 90-minute Hollywood blockbuster in 1995.
Yeah. No, you're spot on. And it's a shame because, like you said, this is a point in Hugh Grant's career. He's off the back of the big break, the big proper break, which is Four Weddings and a Funeral. And his LA agents are going, you've got to, Hugh, come on now.
The phones are ringing.
You've got to choose something. And he's turning down script after script after script. And they're like, please, come on now. This is getting silly. You need to choose something. And so Hugh goes, all right, fine. And he chooses 9 months. He admits this day that was a mistake. And two things happened. Maybe the script wasn't the best, but I don't know. But secondly, the paycheck, he thinks, because it's so much bigger than what he got for Four Weddings and a Funeral, he thinks, well, I've got to act that much as well. And that's maybe where some of the problems come. Also, one of the problems, I suppose, with this film was the fact that, you know, 2 weeks maybe or a week before its release, that's when Hugh Grant was caught with sex worker Divine Brown, and there was the whole furore around that. So it's kind of an interesting point in his career to look at regardless. But I think, you know, because the film is directed by Christopher Columbus, we're talking Mrs. Doubtfire, we're talking Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, we're talking, you know,
Home Alone,
the list goes on. An incredible director for like family fun friendly films. This is not a family fun friendly film. Even though Barney the Dinosaur features, but gets beaten the shit out of by Hugh Grant, which is a really crazy scene. And there's also this awful scene, which we've talked about a lot, with Robin Williams, ladies and gentlemen, who's in the film, who plays a Russian doctor who's only ever, delivered babies from monkeys and rats, who has to deliver this baby at the end of the film. And it's this awful delivery scene, which is just crazy and mental and awful. The film has a lot of problems. And yes, I completely agree with you. I think this film wouldn't be so high up if Hugh Grant wasn't in it so much on our list. So yeah, I think, but that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm going to try, throughout this process, I'm trying my hardest not to be a pretentious film critic, because that's kind of what we are at this point.
That's my thing.
Yeah, I know. So I'm just going to try and take that hat off a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm taking the hat off and, you know, if I was to watch this film with no, you know, bias towards Hugh Grant, there are some fun moments in this film. Jeffrey Goldblum is funny.
Yeah.
There are some kind of like just quirky, interesting bits, like the Barney dinosaur bit.
Yeah.
Robin Williams, if you can kind of get away from his Russian accent, it's always fun watching him on screen.
Yep.
So
yep.
Compare this to 2 weeks' notice, which I personally really think is just a really hammed up, shitty rom-com. I do think there are parts of 9 months that justify it being in the top half of Hugh Grant's filmography.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. He also has an earring and a monobrow. So, you know, when you think about it like that, worth it.
Yeah.
Going head-to-head for 23rd and 22nd place is The Pirates, Band of Misfits, and Bitter Moon.
All right, Diggs. Well, we're getting to the business end of this episode, and we're nearly at the top 20, which is crazy.
Wow.
I mean, I can't believe we've already spoken about like 28 films, but here we are. And we've got another tiebreaker between 22nd and 23rd place in the list. Two very different films being pissed against each other.
I can't believe we're talking about these two.
Yeah, I don't think these two films have ever been whispered in the same breath together. But anyway, here we are. We have got Bitter Moon from 1992, and then 20 years later, The Pirates, Band of Misfits, 2012.
Well, I mean, just to say again, a little short synopsis so people at home will understand why these films are so different. The Pirates Band of Misfits is, you know, it's an animation. Hugh Grant is a swashbuckling pirate, the captain, who wants to win Pirate of the Year award. And it's all the fun scrapes and japes where he comes across, is it Queen Victoria and an incel Charles Darwin voiced by David Tennant. Lots of fun, family fun there. Let's pivot back to Bitter Moon, which is a film in keeping with Hugh Grant's early works in that it is a sex fest.
It's kind of like a softcore porn film.
Softcore porn film. That's exactly right. It's Hugh Grant and his lovely, lovely wife are on this boat. They meet a chap there called Oscar, and his partner Mimi. Oscar is this. Is a bit of a weird bloke who keeps like getting Hugh Grant in his room to tell him all these stories about how when he wasn't wheelchair bound, him and his partner Mimi, who's this like beautiful young woman, used to have all these crazy sex parties and stuff like that, including, you know, there's a scene where Mimi pees on the television and then Oscar like comes over and she pees on him and he pretends to be a pig and they have sex and Mimi pours yogurt on herself and Oscar licks her actual nipple in the film. That's the film we're watching. Anyway, compare that to the Pirates Band of Misfits and I think I love Bitter Moon so much because of how mental it is. But then I would place it at 22nd, and the Pirates Band of Misfits, though actually quite fun, and actually got quite a bit of edge to it, I'd
very
put
much
that
so.
At 23rd. What about you?
Yeah, Diggs, I think I'm going to agree with you, yeah. I mean, I was just looking up Bitter Moon, and just to remind myself of the film, and I came across this just kind of really crisp synopsis of it, which was that it's a world-class, defiantly bad film that has a life of its own. It's like a world-class bad film.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
The more sinister part of it, which putting my, you know, my film critic hat back
Get
on.
Get it back on.
The problem I have with this film is that it's directed by Roman Polanski, who is sort of, he's been cancelled at this point. And it just, it stinks of like his fantasies and sadistic kind of like sex life, like it's like his fantasies on screen a little bit, and that is a bit of a red flag. So that that doesn't sit that well with me personally. But it is like it's a great experience for Hugh early on his career, like, you know, this is really like, you know, apart from, we'll talk about it later, The Lair of the White Worm and a couple of other films that he does that are wacky, this is the most wacky Hugh Grant film that there is out there. Yeah. And so if someone comes up to me in the street when our podcast finally goes viral and says to me, oh, you're from Taking Hugh for Granted, if there's any Hugh Grant film that I haven't seen that I should watch, what should it be? I would slide a copy of Bitter Moon to him and say, put this on when no one else is in the room and have yourself a time, because it is crazy. And it was one of the first films we watched, and Hugh is like this little child caught up in this nightmare, which makes it perfect. And it couldn't be any further away from Pirates Band of Misfits, could it? Which in itself, I love that film. I thought that film was great. And it's like, I guess, that move away that Hugh Grant takes to slightly different types of work. And he admitted himself that, you know, he wanted something that his children could watch and it could enjoy. And that gave him a lot of happiness for that. So different times of his career.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to watch one of them, Bitter Moon is your ticket, isn't it? It's mental. It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's Hugh Grant. It's bumbling posh best. And also, I will tell you what, you know, maybe actually I won't talk about the ending and exactly what happens, but it's another ending that is unexpected and kind of makes you think. And similarly, actually, fuck me, the ending of Pirates Band of Misfits is also terrifying. If I was a kid, I would have been like, oh my God, what is going on? Like, so that film has a bit of edge to it too. So, but yes, I think that's the way to do it, because we just love Bitter Moon. And like you say, I always have a copy of Bitter Moon on me. So if you do see me, just come up and I will just slip one to you.
In 21st of Hugh Grant's greatest films to date is Rowing with the Wind, original title Remando al Viento.
Oscar Beardmore Gray, we're here. We're at the 21st film. We are at Rowing with the Wind, Remando al Viento, which I know you like. So talk to me about this film. Are you happy that it's at 21?
I am happy, Diggs, and I know you're not happy because I know you thought it was shit.
Yeah.
I thought this film was very entertaining. It's like a shit horror film. It's like this backstory to Mary Shelley's life when, like, I guess, like, Frankenstein has come back to haunt the writer. That's the premise. It's set in some wacky, like, old house in Italy.
Yeah. I believe.
And the reason why this film is ranked so highly, Diggs, for me, is because it is the film where Elizabeth Hurley stars with Hugh Grant. And Elizabeth Hurley was involved in the creative process. And it's the film where basically Hugh and her hit it off. And it was such an important moment in Hugh's career. Obviously, you know, things didn't work out in the end. But, you know, I know she, from what Hugh has said about her, she was really important in shaping his career. And as a result, I think it should be up there in the kind of, you know, the top third of his films in his career.
I love that because I think you're right. And she definitely did help shape his career. I mean, we're going to talk about, I think we've still got two of the films to go, which they made together in their joint production company, Simeon Films. So they're still to come. They're good films. Like, this is an exciting thing to talk about. And what's so fun about this film as well is, yes, it's where they met, but also it's because they are love interests with each other in this film. Hugh Grant's character, Lord Byron, is an insufferable dick. He is an evil, evil bastard. He is a pompous prick. And it's so fun in this film because, as I said in our episode, he is the original fuckboy. You know, Elizabeth Hurley in this film is obsessed with Hugh and she does everything. She just wants his attention all the time and he just takes her and leaves her whenever he wants, basically. You know, like, there's a lot of kissing in this film as well between the two of them. So, and a lot of tongues, my word, a lot of tongues. So if you want to see that action going on as well, and oh yes, of course. And also, she gets her kit off at one point. Anyway, listen, guys. There's a lot. It's again quite a sexual film, like we said about Hugh Grant's early career. A lot of sexy sauciness. But what I love most about this film, and actually, I have to apologise to you for this, is that I might have slightly messed up my rankings. And I think that I said that Hugh Grant maybe was a 4 out of 5, and that he was sexy 3 out of 5. I want to swap those around. I forgot in this film, he's got a lot of volume to his hair at the start. Then at some point, he suddenly becomes like Tarzan and he's got loads of hair and he's got this incredible body, which you described as Greek godlike. And there is no other better way to describe it. He looks incredible. And he wears these knee-high boots, which at one point he's being undressed and he's like, don't take off the boots, never the boots, which I think is always amazing. It's fabulous. It's funny. Listen, I maybe don't like the film that much, but I think you're absolutely right. There is a lot to like about it contextually and in just the fun in that. So I think fair enough.
Yeah, I think, Diggs, I think, again, you know, in our rankings here, we do have to take into consideration some of the wider context of where a film sits in this ranking. You know, Rowing with the Wind, I think we can probably both agree, is not a classic. It's not a classic Hugh Grant film, but where it comes in his career, the meaning and the context behind it means that it should be up there. You know, there are some films that are just, they're just meaningless. They're meaningless and they're lost in the ether of, you know, terrible films of the 20th century. This would be lost in the ether of terrible films of the 20th century if it didn't have Elizabeth Hurley in it. Yeah. And I think because of that reason, it takes its rightful place as 21st in our overall ranking.
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely love it. There we go. Well, Oscar, I think this is becoming a regular feature now that you came up with, and I bloody love it. Of the 10 that we've just talked about, if I gave you the DVD right now, because, you know what? Kids won't even know what a DVD is. If I said it was on Netflix, sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? We've got to get with the times here.
Exactly. So it's on Netflix or whatever, your streaming service of choice. Which one are you choosing? Which one are you putting on right this second?
Hmm. That is a tough one. Because now it's not as obvious as the previous episodes where it was like
they're getting better.
Yeah. They are getting better. You know what? I'm going to say I'm sticking on the Englishman who went up a hill but came down a mountain.
mate, I'm not going to lie. I'm doing the exact same thing.
Yes.
I think I am. Because you know what? Champagne Charlie's amazing. It's too long. Bitter Moon, I am not feeling horny enough for. And Sense Sensibility, you know what? Watching it the other day kind of put me off. So, the Englishman who went up a hill but came down a mountain. It's just...
Next time we get together and watch a Hugh Grant film, that is the one we're watching.
A hundy P. Oh my God, guys, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure yet again. I'm having such a good time.
Been such a pleasure, Diggs. What we got to look forward to in the next two, like the next episode? We've only got two more episodes. We've only got 20 films left.
I know.
They're all good after this.
They're all going to be good. I mean, I think what we've got coming up, I know in the next episode, we've got a lot of ties. So there's going to be a lot of debating. So get your debating boots on, a la Rowing with the Wind. And then I think in that top 10, I mean, that's when the viewers are going to flood in. That's when the listeners are going to go crazy, because that's what we really want to see. But that's when we've got a lot of surprises for you. There's going to be a few things that you've never even heard of.
I hope that we're not going to lose listeners, because there are, I know that people have loyalties. They have serious loyalties. And I know that there's going to be one film that drops quite a long way that's featuring in the next episode that I think there's going to be some unhappy fans.
Yeah. Well, we can make all of our justifications for that then. And to be honest, no publicity is bad publicity.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Well, as always, follow us on Instagram. Facebook, we're at Taking You For Granted. We're also on Twitter, we're at Taking Hugh. Potentially, I was talking to Oscar before, potentially at this point we'll be on TikTok, who knows? But you'll know, you'll be able to find us on there. We'll probably be at Taking Hugh or at Taking You For Granted. Look us up on there, you'll find us. We've probably already gone viral on there. Watch us on YouTube if you're not already. We are filming all these episodes and we're putting them out on there. But otherwise, guys, get subscribed, get following, and we'll see you next time for the epic retrospective 20 to 11th.
Can't wait, Diggs.
Bye.
Bye.